welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget you can stream us live at www.guardiantalkradio.com, and you can also download the app. It's called TuneIn. You can download it from the App Store or the Play Store, and you can listen to us on your mobile device. So this evening in the studio, I'm very pleased to have a wonderful artist who is really considered one of the outstanding masters in his particular field in the Bahamas, and that is metalworking. And I'm going to say good evening now to Tyrone Ferguson. Good evening, Tyrone.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Yeah. So let's tell the audience, how do you become a blacksmith? Because you're this incredible, basically you can turn metal into the most marvelous objects, but where does that begin? How do you know, A, you're interested, and B, once you are interested, how do you go about really learning that skill? Who teaches that to you?
That to me is a very difficult question, because you know, I'm not sure whether we come to blacksmithing or blacksmithing comes to us.
Well, I mean, I guess that's true for a lot of innate talents, is that they choose you.
I think that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
It's like destiny had it that I grew up very near a shop that was considered the last shop where they practice artistic blacksmithing.
And so were you like hanging out at the shop, or did it start when you were like little, kind of bending wires? And I mean, how did you know your hands could do that?
I wasn't like bending like just wire.
Yeah.
You know, I just played around with stuff.
Yeah.
You know, from as long as I can remember, but I kind of automatically gravitated to this experience because it kind of called me. You know, there was sparks flying all over the place.
That's gonna be exciting for you.
There was like noise and
yeah.
You know, it was like sometimes like chaotic, but there was always like an outcome, you know. And I noticed the outcome, and I look at the process, and it was like, hey, this should be fun.
But yeah, and I know you told me that like you were sort of known in the neighborhood for being like the guy that could fix it all. Like, people would just come to you with problems.
And that kind of came to me intuitively because I was an inquisitive person. Mm-hmm. So I just experimented with a whole lot of stuff. I wanted to see how stuff was made, so I would pull stuff apart.
I was going to say, were you one of those kids that drove your parents crazy?
Yeah, that's right. I did that a whole lot.
What did you do to my toaster?
So sometimes people would bring something to me to fix, and I would say to them, there's a chance that I could possibly fix it, but there's also a chance that, you know, it may not work again after I've played with it.
What was your ratio?
Because that's what I'm always doing, playing with stuff. I think I was probably more successful than not.
Yeah, you gave me a toaster, but here I gave you back something entirely different. I gave you back an art object. So how did you become then? I mean, if you are, you have this facility, what would somebody must have allowed you then into the metalworking shop? And I mean, that's a dangerous environment for a kid, right? Like you said, there's sparks flying, there's hot things. How did that come about that you were embraced into that environment?
The first few years, I just was watching. You know, you had to sit at a distance and just watch, and you had to discipline yourself to just watch. But I watched, and I got to have a little practice, like on lunchtime when nobody was around.
This was like during
summer, on summer breaks,
I would
like be there, and I would just like get to pound out stuff. And sometimes I found myself doing what they were doing in the shop, and doing it quite different from the way it was being done. And I always wanted to do something in a different way from the way I saw it being done. Like, who said this is how it needs to be done? Like, why don't you try doing it like this? So I kind of pushed myself and pushed the process that I saw in operation at that time. So when it was time for me to choose a career, I gravitated toward metal fabrication and machine shop practice, which was all combining different spheres of metal work.
But did you identify in yourself at that time that you were doing something, that you were being creative in a way that maybe other people you were working alongside weren't? Did you understand at that point you were a quote-unquote artist? Or was that something that you didn't really come to yet?
I didn't know. I didn't. I think others brought me to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I became that person. Mm-hmm. You know, people would say, you know, I know someone who could do this. Mm-hmm. So I became that someone, you know, eventually. So they didn't call me a blacksmith. They didn't call me a metal worker. They didn't call me a welder, because I was always doing something what probably they couldn't find anyone else to do it. So people would say, I know someone who could probably do this for you. And it's still happening today. People are saying, you know, like, well, you know, there's this person, you know, I know someone, or like, let me put you in touch with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the reference to like calling me an artist, other people began calling me an artist before I started calling myself an artist.
And how long did it take you to agree with them? Was that something that was difficult for you? Because sometimes, you know, for example, we just put it's different because he never developed into an artist, but we just put a show up that's on view now at the National Art Gallery. And part of the reason we wanted to do it was to show people that there is creativity in so many different forms of practice. That, you know, you talk about art and people imagine Rembrandt with his big floppy hat and a paintbrush, right? But art is so many things. So we have a show on right now, which is essentially about structural engineering of George Cox, you know, understood by his son, John Cox, who is an artist. And John told me that his dad refuses to accept the fact that he's an artist. He's like, no, I don't. What I do isn't art. What I do is structural engineering. But he does all these beautiful drawings. They did all the drawings by hand back in those days. And of course, there's a lot of creativity and the mental leaps that you have to make to solve problems. Was that something that you had an effort with, being self-identifying as an artist? Or was that something you were like, oh, yeah, I guess I am, sure.
You know what? You know, I always try to stay away from the labels because, you know, I was taught the labels kind of like put me in a kind of a box.
And yeah, they do, yeah.
I never wanted to be in a box, but I began, you know, looking at what I did in a very serious way when I met an Austrian architect, Henry Melick.
Henry Melick, sure, yeah. He built quite a few houses here. Mm-hmm.
He was designing these houses, and he would put a tile with his signature somewhere near the front entrance of the house. So I was working on a project that he was working on, and was like, hey, like, since he's referring to me as an artist, why not put my signature somewhere on a work? And so it kind of began, you know, to dawn on me, well, maybe this probably is art that you're doing, you know, for want of a definition.
And actually in your studio, what I love about your studio is there's all these really weird objects lying around, right? And they just look like, I don't even know what they look like. They look like strange metal tool things, but they don't even, you know, they look like something you might have left over, but they turn out to have these extremely specific tasks. And they're things that you create to solve problems in your metalwork.
Indeed.
So how do you come about even doing that?
So, see, going back into the theory of blacksmithing, we need to remember that the blacksmith was the person who made the tools that made the tools for the Industrial Revolution.
That's true, yeah.
You know, so the blacksmith
made the chisel or whatever.
Yeah, so the blacksmith was always, you know, tooling. So each project that I do tends to be kind of unique, so I may have to make tools that are particular to that project. Like, for instance, there was a piece, you know, in the last Transforming Spaces that was actually a tool, you know, started off being a tool that I designed to do a particular job at Paradise Island. And I was about to scrap it because, you know, some things got to stay, some things got to go. You can only keep so many, you know,
bits of metal lying around. Yeah.
So I was about to discard. And when I realized, like, hey, this is just a beautiful piece of artwork that I'm throwing away, and I started seeing it in a new light, so I just sat it there, and it grew, you know, like I would add a piece to it, add another piece, and kind of allow it to take the direction it wanted to go in, but I felt good about it, and a lot of times I'm going with the feeling, like, this feels good, you know, and so visually it looks good to me, and I just go with it.
Does different metal give you a different feeling? Does it speak to you in a different way when you have, say, you have a sheet of copper, or you have a sheet of aluminium, or you have a sheet of steel? Do you feel that the material itself will tell you what to do?
That happens a lot because, again, there are limitations. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something that I may be able to do in copper that I can't do in stainless steel. So it's up to mm-hmm. me to push stainless steel to its mm-hmm. limit, to its mm-hmm. potential, to like even beyond, and to do the same thing with copper or any other metal. So it's experience based mm-hmm. in that I bring a whole lot of experience into what I'm doing, but then I want to play around mm-hmm. with that experience and see if I can push it further, like take it above the temperature, cool it down slower than mm-hmm. I'm supposed to cool it down. So I'm doing stuff like...
You're like a mad scientist.
Kind of, you know.
But I suppose, you know, with your experience, you would, if someone gives you a job, they want X thing, you would know going in what metal would work for that better than the next. But then does it ever happen that then, you know, they ask you for something, you get the metal that you think is appropriate, but then when you're there, you feel like actually it should be something else. Does that, you know, or it takes you in a direction that you didn't pre-plan, I suppose.
That happens. And often, you know, if I have a relationship with the client personally, mm-hmm. I would mm-hmm. call and say, well, you know, I think this thing is going in a different direction. You mm-hmm. should come and see, you know, mm-hmm. how it's going and see if you're okay with it. Mm-hmm. But most times they would trust me and say, well, just
go with it.
Let's move towards the finish line. And sometimes the outcome is way beyond what they expected, way beyond mm-hmm. what I expected. Mm-hmm. But it's a good feeling that it works. But you know in your heart that it's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I remember, I think it was, might have even been Michelangelo that spoke to how, you know, the individual block of marble was already a sculpture. He just was discovering it. Like, but it was already in there, and it wasn't really him making it. It was the stone, like, allowing him to discover it, which I thought was a really sort of beautiful thing to say, because it's almost like it's not just you, it's you and the material together, sort of on a journey somehow.
For me, you know, I think what's even more complex for me is that it begins with an idea mm-hmm. more than it begins with a piece of metal, mm-hmm. because, you know, if I'm working for a client, you know, so I'm thinking site specific, mm-hmm. I'm thinking how it fits into the place, the aesthetics, mm-hmm. and all of that. So here it is, like, I'm actually ordering fresh material, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like new metal. So
right.
So it's more about the goal, it's more about the intention than about the material. So mm-hmm. so how do I marry the material, and what are the best materials to marry to this outcome that I want to accomplish? That comes into play a whole lot.
And we'll get to talk about, you know, our big commission, because that's one of the reasons you came in. But we're going to go to a break soon, because we did the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas recently commissioned a set of entry gates from you. So we'll talk about that a little bit after, because I think we've touched on a few of those ideas, like what it's like to work between, because I think that's also in the relationship between the commissioner and the artist, and when that comes together in a really, like you spoke to how, you know, you'll call up your client and say, well, it's going in this way. I think you're lucky. It sounds like you're very lucky that you have a really good understanding with the people you work with, because I think that's the most beautiful thing, because then it's sort of like a collaborative work of art. It's flowing through you. But have you ever had a client who wasn't happy with the way something was going?
the only problems I've had with clients was the length of time yeah. it took to do the work. So normally when they yeah. see the outcome of the work, they forget about it.
They're like, yeah.
to get it.
That's good. Well, I could understand that. I think everyone's always happy whenever they've got Tyrone Ferguson anywhere in their vicinity. They're happy people, and I know we will be too. So we're going to go for a short break. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm in the studio this evening with Tyrone Ferguson, who is the leading, many words, metal worker, artist, what else do we say, blacksmith, all those things rolled into one, who will be creating a set of gates for the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. We're going to talk more about that after the break. You're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We'll be back shortly. Thank you.